Hi, and welcome to the At Peace Parents podcast. I'm Casey, and I'm here to empower you in your decision-making as a parent of a demand-avoidant child. My goal is to share insights that will generate aha moments and support your connection with your child. I'm a mom of two amazing little boys, one of whom is PDA, and I've worked with hundreds of parents just like you to teach them how to lead their child out of burnout and find the clarity, peace, and sense of community they need. What is the difference between setting boundaries and having strict rules when you are parenting a PDA child or teen? So today, for our coffee with Casey, I want to talk about the fourth installment of the difference between parenting and caregiving for a PDA child or teen and gentle parenting. And this is the topic of boundaries versus rules. So I'm going to start with logic so that can help you clarify your thinking conceptually. Then we're going to talk about misconceptions around boundaries in the low demand or parenting a PDA child space. And then we're going to talk about the differences with examples from our recent trip with the kids to Chicago about rules and boundaries. Okay, so I hope this is clarifying for your thinking and decision making as a parent of a PDA child or teen and or a neurodivergent child, because I think a lot of these apply regardless. So, what's the difference between rules and boundaries? Okay, so in a lot of the gentle parenting spaces, we see, like, even though we're being gentle and flexible, we need to have firm boundaries, right? We need to be in a position of authority to create a sense of safety, and we need to be consistent with those boundaries. But often there is a conflation, meaning we're using two terms as if they're the same, even though they're not. There's a conflation between boundaries and rules, okay? So rules are when we have a set or defined rule that is maintained through rewards and sanctions. It is static and unmoving, and it is based more on the parent, teacher, or therapist trying to control the behavior of the child or teen rather than a boundary which can be flexible, fluctuating, based on underlying values and not stated, and is based more on what the parent, teacher, therapist does in response. Okay? So this is the way I conceptualize it. Rules are more about us trying to control another, and boundaries are more focused on what we do in response to a situation, which is our real agency, right? Ultimately, the only thing that we can control is ourselves. My belief is that we can never actually truly, over the long term, control another human being, whether they are our child or not. Okay? So, Casey, this is like esoteric. What are you talking about? Let's do some examples, and let's talk about the examples that are most often asked about. So when we're talking about boundaries, the three things that parents ask me about the most are screens, siblings, and school. Okay, so we don't have time to go through all of these, but I'm going to just give you an example of screen times and siblings through these two different lenses. Okay, so if we're talking about rules, we would have screen time limits like the following. We allow 1 hour of screens every day on the weekdays, and then we allow 2 hours on the weekends, okay? And if the child tries to do more than that, there is a consequence or a punishment. It might be like, okay, then it's reduced the next day, okay, or you lose your screen time over the weekend, right? Because they're not complying with the rule and they're not turning it off after an hour, or they're behaving in a way where the transition is difficult, and so in response, we have a sanction, okay? So this is a rule that is static, it's always the same, and needs to be followed by the child. Okay, and if it is followed, it's rewarded either in a small way, like, good job, you know, you did a great job, or, oh, you can get an extra half hour this weekend because you did that. Whereas boundaries are not necessarily stated, but they might have the same goal as the rule, right? For example, parents want to do 1 hour of screen time a day and 2 hours on the weekend because their underlying desire, which is a good one, is to prevent their child from sensory dysregulation, which they observe has happened because of too much screen time. Okay? But with a boundary, instead of stating it's an hour and you must comply with that, it might be we're going underneath and looking at the actual goal, which is I want to make sure my kid is not having too much screen time because that can cause sensory dysregulation. So what I have to do as a parent is I have to observe what's actually going on. And some days it might be that 2 hours is fine. And another day it might be like, ooh, 30 minutes and they're starting to get agitated. Okay, so then the boundary becomes what we do in response. Okay, so I hope this is making sense so far. Feel free to drop a little heart if it's making sense to you. Okay, so what might our boundary be? What we do in response? We might turn off the Wi-Fi. Well, we might start with, you know, if we have a trusting relationship and our kid's not in burnout and we've been working through this lens for a long time, like in my home, I might just say, like, I'm noticing that you're really having a hard time. Like, you know, I was thinking of going and jumping on the trampoline, right? So I'm strewing, I'm using declarative language, I'm offering another opportunity for sensory regulation and connection. And so I'm not asking him to get off a screen without another regulating scenario on the other side. Okay. But I do have the monitoring of, like, is he getting dysregulated because of the screen? And because I have a trusting relationship, I don't necessarily have to set a boundary. But if I did, it would be what I have control over in response, not punishing or sanctioning him because he didn't get off. Okay. So that's the different logic. Why does this matter? It matters because of the neuroception, which is the subconscious pre-perceptual sense of threat of our PDA kids, okay? And this is directly connected to boundaries and rules, okay? So our unique PDA kids and teens have this red part of the brain, which we all have, the amygdala or the limbic system, which is always scanning for threat. But what's unique about our kids is that whenever there's a perceived loss of autonomy, meaning they get to decide or not, or a perceived loss of equality, or them even being above you, then they're gonna have a nervous system response that they might not even understand. Their nervous system is just going to go into fight, flight, or freeze, or collapse, okay? And so rules inherently cause more nervous system activation for our kids than boundaries. Because boundaries allow us flexibility in the moment, okay? So there's a misconception, I think, that often gets thrown around in this space or leveraged at us as parents that, like, this is laissez-faire and this is, like, you know, you're not paying any attention, there's no rules, there's no boundaries. It couldn't be further from the truth. But the truth of the matter is that we have to prioritize boundaries through the lens of the nervous system costs and benefits. Because in gentle parenting, or with even a child, this is my belief, even a child without this neuroception of PDA, even if they're autistic, even if they're ADHD, they're not necessarily going to have this cost-benefit equation that you're doing as a parent, right? So anytime you do set a boundary, there will be nervous system activation and a trust cost. That is simply the way that the nervous system disability works. So especially if you're in the beginning of this, in the beginning of the new lens and reestablishing trust, you're going to have to dramatically reimagine and prioritize boundaries differently, because the cost of setting boundaries is cumulative. So the cost of, you know, telling your child, like, I'm going to turn off the Wi-Fi, it may be necessary. It may be necessary. But when you do, there will be a cost to the nervous system, and it builds to the point where if we're not accommodating and bringing that cumulative nervous system activation down, they could move into this place of, like, where you see the violence, where you see the equalizing or shutdown or burnout. Okay, we have to start thinking that the boundaries we set have a cost that may, over the long term, impact our relationship, their ability to access their basic needs, right? Like eating, sleeping, hygiene, safety, toileting, and their overall nervous system activation, which impacts their behavior, right? So through that lens and context, it might not seem as important in the cost-benefit lens to, you know, make sure your kid does their chore or pick up their clothes, because setting that boundary or having that rule will have the cost of potentially impeding them from accessing basic needs, okay? So let me give you another example. So in our home, we don't have hard and fast rules. And believe me, I've tried this. Like, I remember when my kid was like 4 and 5, and we would like have like sit down times where we would like outline the rules, and my son would just be like equalizing up a storm, growling, climbing on the back of couches. Like, there was no ability to even communicate it. And any rule we set, it was like a fixation on not doing that, because that's how the neuroception works. Okay. But we have a value, we have values that connect to our boundaries. So for example, in our family, and every family is different, our value is you can't hurt anyone else physically, mentally, psychologically, okay? So that's different than saying the rule is you can't push your brother, okay? So we don't have a stated rule, like if you push your brother, then you lose screen time, or if you push your brother, then you have to go to your room, right? That's a rule orientation, but we have the value of you can't hurt your brother, right? And that is a cultural thing in our home, and it's flexible. So sometimes, you know, there's a little pushing back and forth, and we don't say anything, right? And sometimes we do. It depends on the context, right? Whereas a rule, you have the pressure as a parent of like, oh, there was a push, now I need to do something, right? So let me give you an example from our trip to Chicago. Often, you know, when we see a little bit of pushing, we're observing like the facial expressions of my younger son. Is there activation for him? Is he perceiving danger? Is this traumatic for him? Or is this just like a little bit of roughhousing between the kids and they're getting their sensory needs met? It depends, right? So we don't have that hard and fast rule, but when we went to Chicago, they're not used to being in a city, and we had to be more hypervigilant and enforce more boundaries because it's a much more dangerous scenario, right? Like, in my small town in Michigan, if they run out into the street, there's not that many cars. Whereas if you're in downtown Chicago, it's very dangerous, right? Or like pushing your brother on the elevated train platform, right? So that started to happen on one of the days where, you know, they were pushing in a way that they might in our small town or in our home, in a way that like we can allow them to push the boundaries a little bit while observing their, you know, are they in safe and social? Do we need to intervene? But this is a different context. So what was our boundary? We're walking off the train platform and we're going home. Not as a punishment, but just like our boundary is like, we can't manage this safely. And so we walked down the train platform. You know, we didn't try and teach them in the moment or correct them because they were activated. We didn't, you know, make them feel bad or punish them and say like, okay, tomorrow we're not going to the Shedd Aquarium because you're pushing on the platform. We simply set the boundary of like, our bodies can't be safe, so mommy and daddy are going to take us home, right? And yes, that was activating. And yes, it was frustrating as parents, but like, it wasn't safe, okay? So our boundary was, it's not safe, so we remove ourselves from the situation. Okay, so another example from our Chicago trip, and I think this is a good illustrative example of how rules and boundaries are different, because it demonstrates how rules are static and boundaries can fluctuate depending on what you observe about your child's cumulative nervous system activation and how close they are to their threshold before they tip over into like true dangerous behavior or reducing eating. So in our family, and what I teach in the Paradigm Shift program, and also in the Progress with PDA workshop, is how to track indicators over time so that we can start to sense, like, do we need to lower boundaries and demands, or can we enforce more boundaries and demands depending on how close our kids are to their threshold or near burnout? Okay, so we measure three things: access to basic needs, connection, and cumulative nervous system activation. And I actually teach how to track these indicators, But in our family, I'm looking at the amount of equalizing behavior against the brother. I'm noticing whether or not my son's eating or it's starting to become more restrictive, okay? And I'm always monitoring this. So when we got to Chicago, it was a lot of big changes. It was our family all being together, and we've been splitting the kids for 3 years for safety. And so, you know, it was a lot of sensory input. It was a big transition. Everything was different. And frankly, my husband and I think were too ambitious about what we could do because the kids were excited. So we're like, let's, you know, take the L platform and let's like do all this stuff. But one of the things that happened was we're at an Airbnb, and the value that I hold is like, don't destroy other people's Airbnbs, obviously. So, you know, I wanted to be very cautious of like, we're not going to stain other people's couches by eating on the couch. And my younger son, William, had like a probiotic yogurt and he spilled it on the couch. And, you know, we got upset, not like in a yelling way but just like, oh no, like we're hurting someone else's things, which is a value that I hold. So my husband was frustrated and he was like, okay, no eating on the couch, right? That's a rule. What happened? Lots of activation, which wasn't necessarily something that was bad, right? Where my son is in his cumulative nervous system activation. It's something we expect and can tolerate of like, okay, we said that it activated him. He can tolerate it. But because we were on vacation and he was over the first couple days starting to get more activated, more equalizing, having more trouble eating, I observed like, we need to make this context more like home. Okay. And what does that mean? We allow them to eat on the couch. So instead of adhering to the rule that my husband had set the day before, which is the mindset of you in gentle parenting, you can't go back on a rule, even if it's a kind rule. It has to be firm, because if you go back on the rule, it's not going to create a sense of safety or who's in authority. But this is a different logic that we're working with boundaries. So instead of saying, well, now we said the rule, we have to double down on it, I saw it as an opportunity to think about problem solving. Okay, what do we actually want? What we actually want is for this person's couch not to get dirty. Okay, we could try and make that happen with a rule, but it's not going to work well with our kids. Or we could problem solve. So what did we do? We took all the blankets that we brought in our van and we put them all over the couch to make sure that nothing got spilled, right? So we retracted the rule based on what we were observing and allowed it to fluctuate. And yes, your conditioning around parenting and teaching and therapy is going to be like, well, you can't go back on a rule because that totally confuses the kid. It makes it seem like you don't have your, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. You're not in control. You're not a safe person. But this is a different logic. Okay. This is a different logic that we're all working through with these unique kids. Okay. So this is my belief. Rewards and sanctions and compliance-oriented ways of being with PDA autistic children and teens will never work. What do I mean by that? They might work in the short term, right? Like they might do the thing, they might follow the rules. In fact, they might be very compliant. However, if they're truly a PDA child or teen, they are internalizing the threat response that their neuroception is perceiving. Okay, so even if the outward behavior is compliant and they're doing the thing, if they truly have a PDA brain and nervous system, it is accumulating in their nervous system and you will start to see it impact their basic needs and they may move into burnout. And I know that's hard to hear, but I've worked with hundreds of families and many of them have internalized PDAers who hit a wall, who were like, super compliant, perfect kid. And obviously they saw some things like generalized anxiety. Maybe there was an eating disorder. Maybe there were some OCD tendencies, but they were responded to with behavioral approaches or compliance-oriented approaches. And then they hit a wall and it's severe burnout. Okay. So I'm not saying that to scare you. I'm just saying like, we have to think long-term. Because you can't change the way that your child's nervous system works or the way that their brain perceives threat in the moment, right? We can work to create a relationship and felt safety where we're helping them back into the thinking brain over and over again so that they can learn, so that they can connect, and so that we can teach them how to manage their nervous system disability. Okay? I also want to say, this is not a manifesto against rules. This is not a manifesto against parents who choose reward-sanctioned parenting. This is not a manifesto against anyone, because I truly believe that there are lots of different ways to parent children successfully. It's just that our kids have a unique brain and nervous system, and the logic of it does not allow for traditional parenting to lead to long-term well-being. Okay? Lastly, I want to say, I recognize the cost to you of having to move between rules to boundaries, because rules are easy, right? They're easy on your brain because you're just set the rule, now do it, it's on you, right? This is when we eat, this is when you go to bed, this is when you turn off the iPad, you need to put, the rule is you pick up your shoes, you put things in your backpack, you do your homework, and you manage yourself. Right? And I might have to intervene when you're not doing it with rewards and sanctions, but ultimately it's easy. And I'm just going to say that because I wish I could do rules. My life would be so much easier. I'd have so much brain space. I'd have a very structured and non-chaotic life. But I operate with boundaries, and that means I'm constantly using my executive functioning, and now it's easier because I've done it for years and I teach it. But if we constantly have to be making this cost-benefit decision with problem solving while tracking cumulative nervous system activation, and can they handle this boundary now, right? And it's going to change over time. It's going to change when they're in burnout. The boundaries are going to change when you're reestablishing a relationship. And 5 years in, like me, you're going to have more boundaries than you did in burnout. That's just the nature of, how they progress and how the relationship progresses if you work through this lens. But ultimately, I just want to end with a belief I have come to through this journey with my son. And I think it's an absolutely universal and profound lesson that he has taught me, which is you can never actually control another person. You can't, right? So we think we can. We think we can change their behavior by the way that we do things or how we interact with them, our subtle reward sanction behaviors, because we're trying to control others in our life, right? And there can be lots of manifestations of this. But what my son has taught me, and this is a big lesson, is that you can't control another human. Right? The change happens through relationship, not power over. Okay, so with that, I'm going to leave you guys to contemplate. So thank you for being here, and I will see you soon. Okay, bye. Thanks everyone for being here with me at the At Peace Parents podcast. This is your source for all things related to understanding, supporting, accommodating, and advocating for your PDA child. To go deeper on any of these topics, check out my course offerings and masterclasses at the website www.atpeaceparents.com. To completely transform the way you think about and relate to your child and to bring peace and stability to your home, join us for the next cohort of the Paradigm Shift program.